I would like to call tonight's Accessibility Advisory Committee's Metro Access Subcommittee meeting to order. Before we continue, I'd like to share a few reminders to support accessibility and smooth participation. Please remain muted unless you are speaking. When speaking, please state your name before your comment. This supports our ASL interpreters, participants joining by phone, and individuals who will listen to the recording. For those joining by phone, you may mute or unmute yourself by pressing star six and raise or lower your hand by pressing star nine. For those joining by computer, please use the microphone icon to mute or unmute and the raise hand feature, which is located under the reactions menu. When making comments, speakers are asked to briefly describe themselves the first time they speak. This supports equitable access for all participants. A brief description may include clothing or distinguishing features and your location relative to the screen. I'll provide a brief example. This is Dr. Maggie Butler. I am a woman with shoulder-length hair. I am wearing a blue dress. I'm seated indoors and speaking from my office. At this time, I am going to share the Metro Access agenda. So give me a moment so I can share my screen. All right. Are you able to see my screen?
Yes, I am.
All right. 4 p.m. call to order. AAC roll call by system-wide accessibility staff. 4:05 p.m. review and approval of meeting agenda and prior meeting minutes. 4:10 p.m. reports, accommodations, customer service, outreach led by Allison Anderson, Operations Manager. 4:15 p.m. Metro Access Work Plan Development, led by your chair, Paul Summerfort. 4:40 p.m. Eligibility Communication and Customer Service Update, led by Mr. Blake, VP of Access Services, and Mr. Colbert, Director of Eligibility Certification. At 5:10 p.m., a discussion focused on Abilities Ride administrative fee rollout, led by Mr. Blake, again, VP of Access Services. At 5:20 p.m., discussion about digital assistant, led by Tyrion Williams Hall, Director of Access Services. 5:35 p.m., public comment period, and 6 p.m., adjournment. And your next Metro Access Subcommittee meeting is September 21st, 2026, and it will be virtual. Right. At this time, we will proceed with roll call. When your name is called, please confirm your presence. Susan Bullmaster.
I am here.
Thank you. Darnice Bush. Tino Calabia, Vanessa Coles, Rico Dancy,
recording here.
All right, thank you. Tawan Farmer,
present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher, Marcy Goldstein. Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Swatha Nandu Kumar. Philippa Mazel. Sandy Nuzel. Phil Posner. Sarah Rod. Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Paul Summerfort.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here. And both Sandy and Sarah said they would be here. So I bet they're going to join.
I do see Sandy, and I did
hear
Sarah.
Oh, you see them both?
Sarah.
Okay.
I'm here. I was just having trouble unmuting. Yep. Sandy.
Good. Okay,
Then
great.
our last member is Philip Weinthrop. Right. At this time, I will turn the meeting over to Chair Summerfeld to proceed with the agenda. Chair, you have the floor.
All righty. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Paul Summerford, Subcommittee Chair. African American male, in his early 50s now, shaved head and wearing a purple t-shirt. Welcome, everybody. So the first thing is any changes or additions to this fully packed agenda for July? If not, can I get a motion to move the agenda as is?
So moved.
Second.
All right, all those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Nays. Abstentions. Okay, motion carries to move the agenda as is. The minutes. Are there any additions or changes that need to be done to the minutes from June's meeting?
This is Sandy. I'd like to suggest again, I did this at the bus rail subcommittee meeting. 13 pages seems awfully long and it includes a lot of boilerplate and unnecessary stuff. I really think the meeting minutes should be 5, 6 pages maximum, that they need to be tightened up when they go into the public record.
Agreed.
Okay. Thank you for those suggestions, and I guess I will work with
Rico
Dr.
here,
Butler.
also seconding that.
Oh, okay.
Do I
Okay.
need to make, Paul, do I need to make that a motion, or are you okay? Is this just a suggestion fine?
Suggestion fine, and I guess I'll work with Dr. Butler with that because we want to make sure we get all the salient important points, but I guess. Okay, we'll work with Dr. Butler to work
Can I
on
just add a point here? Like,
Yes.
Christian Blake, Exit Services, African American male wearing a blue striped shirt. Because I heard the recommendation during the bus and rail subcommittee, and by the way, I agree with it. Don't get me wrong on this. I just wanted to bring the historical context. The reason why it started looking like a court reporter report rather than a summary of notes was precisely because a member of the AAC heavily criticized us for not including every detail. And so that's how we ended up more with a court reporter type of report than a general summary of the key items that were covered. So, I can't speak for system-wide accessibility and Dr. Butler, but that is how this kind of process began. And we just wanted to make sure you all are aware of that it was some of your, in some cases, current, but prior members, colleagues on this committee who wanted the super duper word for word details. And that's how that began. But we agree that a summary is good enough. But I just wanted to provide that context in case this topic comes up again in the near or distant future.
Yeah,
Right.
so I do want to comment that, there were things with minutes where people came back was not enough details or certain key elements were missing. So from prior and current committee members. So Patrick, you want to speak to this?
Yeah, I mean, there's always been additions or corrections to the minutes, so that's kind of normal. But 13 pages is more like a transcript than a than minutes. I mean, there you're looking for action items, even who, said approved and seconded. That's not critical. It's just, I mean, we've been doing minutes for a long time, so I guess everybody knows what's needed there. Do if we need a transcript, as was said back in the bus rail, they wanted a transcript. Fine. I mean, you can have AI do a transcript, but we still need the minutes to be no more than, I would say, no more than 5 or 6 pages. It takes me 35, 45 minutes to be able to read and go through 15, 20 pages.
All right, Tuan, and then we're going to.
Yes, so I understand the nature of why we have the long version, but we also have technology at our fingertips. That is being this is being processed through Zoom. It's being recorded. It's probably being AI'd as well. A summary can be provided. I think so. I believe a summary could be processed utilizing AI to make a more simple version for us to review, at least for our purposes. But as far as the long version, I think for record keeping, there needs to be a long version, and for review by committee, there could be a summarized AI version. That's my opinion.
All right. So I think that, Tawan, thank you for bringing up that point. That would be a happy medium, only because I guess part of the transcript is that, we want the public to have is, be open and transparent with the public and with as much detail, especially from this subcommittee and the level of customers that come through with customer concerns and complaints. Sometimes we want to make sure, the information is transparent to the public, especially with the topics we're talking about. But we definitely will work with staff and we can work with Dr. Butler's team to maybe get us a shortened version while the transcript version still goes on the website. If does that work for hopefully for everybody? And we do need to move on.
Summerfold, we will definitely provide two versions as we shared last in the bus rail meeting. So we'll make sure you all have two versions, a
All
short
right.
version.
So next, we're going to go to Miss Anderson with customer service accommodations, customer service outreach.
Thank you, Chair Semelford. My name is Allison Anderson. I'm an African American. I'm going to say middle-aged female. I have my hair pulled back today in a bun, as well as a blue sweater with a pearl neckline. It is my pleasure to introduce Wanda Muhammad. She is the Administrative Operations Manager with MTM, and she is going to give our readout of the public comment resolution report from our last meeting. Wanda?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Wanda. I am a Black middle-aged female wearing a black sweater with the black jumpsuit today, speaking from the conference room at the New Carrollton Building. During the AAC meeting held on June 1st, 2026, there was one outstanding public comment. The comment involved the Metro Access customer who reported a missed trip. Mr. Blake, Vice President of Access Services, thanked the customer for reporting the issue and advised that the trip details will be reviewed. The investigation revealed that the trip was assigned to the Abilities Ride program through the Alternative Service Lottery. A Metro Access agent was able to assist the customer and successfully arrange transportation through Uber. During the Metro Access subcommittee meeting held on June 15, 2026, there were two outstanding comments. The first comment came from a member of the AAC who shared her experience with scheduling a trip. She tried to select an appointment time, but the system did not offer a suitable pickup window. It was too early for her to leave work. Mr. Blake thanked the committee member for their comment and explained Metro Access's scheduling and pickup window policy. Upon review of the WMATA fixed route equivalent, it indicated that the trip could take up to 2 hours, 7 minutes for transport. A review of the call recording showed that the AAC member spoke to a reservation agent, and the trip was successfully booked with a suitable window time. The last comment was a Metro Access customer who reported discrepancies between the My Transit app and information provided by the Metro Access Operations Call Center regarding vehicle location. Mr. Blake thanked the customer for the feedback and advised that the concern will be investigated further. The issue was forwarded to the OCC contractor IT department for review, and the investigation remains ongoing to determine whether the reported discrepancy can be identified and replicated. Now, moving to commendations. In June 2026, there were 409 commendations. Among the recipients, TransDev OCC received 177, Challenger Gaithersburg received 96, Beaver Road 72, Central Avenue with 41, Abilities Ride 19, Hubbard Road with 2, and MTM with 0. And this concludes my report.
Right. Thank you so much. Any questions before we move on to these topics that we need to get to today? If not, thank you so much, Ms. Muhammad. Ms. Anderson?
I do have a question on one thing. When customers are renewing their Metro Access ID card, when they be approved, why do they have to? They don't know when they're going to get it. That's my question. Because I have a person who got approved and on July 8th, they called customer service. They said they don't know when they're going to get their Metro ID card. Sure.
So, Rico, thank you for that great question. We do have eligibility staff here. We have a topic about eligibility, and that can be answered during that time. So hold your question for that specific topic, okay?
Okay.
All right. When Mr. Colbert, Mr. Blake come on, we can definitely respond to that then. Thank you. Anything with outreach, Ms. Anderson or Mr. Blake?
I'm going to turn that to Mr. Blake on the outreach part.
Yeah, there was one, I think there was more than one, but the only one I can remember, unfortunately. The week after the last Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, I participated in the National Federation of the Blind Northern Virginia, kind of a special call meeting, because I was supposed to be at their regular meeting, and I couldn't make it because of travel, and so they had a special meeting, I want to say on the 22nd, of June, I believe it was, but it was a good conversation. I believe Mr. Chairman was on the call as well. Patrick, I believe you were on that call, if I can recall correctly. But that's the only outreach I remember between now and the last AAC meeting.
This is Sarah. I think it was actually the American Council of the Blind of Virginia. Not the NFB, just for the record.
Sorry about that. Thank you for that correction.
Little alphabet soup there. Thanks.
Yes, yes. No, you're absolutely correct. So I apologize for that. Yeah, it was the ACB that... I forgot the lady's name. I have to look up. Yeah, but you're right. It wasn't NFB. It was the other organization.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Let's get into our first topic today.
Mr. Semaford, this meeting, we also have recognition for the Michael Wilson, as well as the AAC safety. So we're going to start off with the Michael Wilson Recognition Award. So it is my pleasure to introduce Kenya Chalmers. She is the project manager for TransDev, who is our contractor for the OCC. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Chalmers to present our awardee this afternoon.
Thank you, Allison and team. Again, my name is Kenya Chalmers, Black female, middle age, Black blouse, Black blazer, and I'm wearing my glasses today. I'm here to represent and recognize Mr. Sean Bailey. He is on camera with us today. Sean is one of our successful dispatch supervisor assistants here at the OCC. He is a Prince George's County native, born and raised, and so he's super excited and engaged about being able to serve this community. He has an extensive background in customer service. He represents a high level of excellence that we expect from our team every day. He receives multiple customer commendations, and most recently has also helped us onboard new hires, as well as host some of your WMATA summer interns. Sean consistently receives high performance scores on his customer interactions. He has a positive attitude, super professional, and great customer service. And these things are highlighted in his commendations for customers. And so thank you, Sean, so very much for your dedication to Metro Access.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you so much, Sean. Mr. Semaphore, did you want to say anything?
Thank you so much for your service to our wonderful customers on the phone at the call center. As we know, we are wonderfully improving that experience for all customers, and we definitely, hopefully, have more people like him replicated so that when customers call, they are, you know, greeted by examples such as this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've seen Sean just beyond my cubicle, so I can certainly vouch he's doing a great job. So with that, we have our second award recipient that's going to be introduced by Gina Fletcher with our service delivery provider Challenger Transportation. Gina. Gina, if you're speaking, we can't hear you, or you may be frozen.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you now.
Okay. So my name is Gina Fletcher. I'm the Director of Safety Training and HR for Challenger Transportation. I'm a white female, middle age. I have my hair in a bun currently, and I am wearing a gray color shirt. Our recipient this evening is Ms. Marcia Glenn. Ms. Glenn was selected because she's been with our location or been with Metro Access overall for 12 and a half years. She has not been recognized. She does not really like to be recognized. She just likes to do her job on a day-to-day basis. But her safety record, her customer service record, and everything in between is stellar and well above a lot of the everyday operators. With saying this, Ms. Glenn also is a mother of one and a grandmother of one, and she just excels in her everyday personality and everyday day-to-day processes. Ms. Glenn, congratulations. We're very excited to pronounce that you are the recipient of the Safety Award, and this is through our Gaithersburg location. Ms. Glenn is online. Ms. Glenn, would you like to say anything? She might be a little camera shy, so, but again, thank you, Ms. Glenn. I will be seeing you in the next day or so. I do have a little something for you.
Thank you. I'm sorry we couldn't get the mute button off.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. If there is no further comment, we thank you for your service. All right. We're going to move to our first agenda topic here, our subcommittee work plan, that wonderful guiding document that helps, you know, plan our year in terms of, you know, hearing your voice and opinions of things that should go into our work plan that drives our topics. And in speaking to Dr. Butler, you know, we want to have things that are moving on quarterly basis. Is this, you know, how often do we need to have, you know, feedback from presenters and things like that on particular topics. So I'm going to, as I usually do, come in with some suggestions and then want to hear from committee members of suggested topics for our Metro Access that pertains to Metro Access, you know, service. So one thing I do suggest, at least quarterly, is we get a quarterly report at least four times a year on the Metro Access customer service satisfaction survey, since they continually go on. So that will be one suggestion for the work plan. Another suggestion would be updates at least I would say quarterly with the my transit app, since it is still a fairly new tool to some customers. Some people like me have been using it for a year or two, but in terms of app, updates in the app and trying to make it as equivalent as we do with our online booking, but it's a little bit much faster with in hand on a cell phone or on a computer to log in. I will also want to propose that we have on our work plan at least twice a year hearing updates from the Metro Access Eligibility Office about services and things like that. But we get more into details when we get into that as the next topic as to why. Any updates at least yearly on, as Metro procures, new Metro Access vehicles, if they're going to be more purchased and of what type. We've normally been, apprised of that. So at least a yearly update on that and, getting feedback from the committee. Customer guide updates. There's been obviously a lot of changes going on. So I'm proposing that that is a topic that is brought up at least twice a year because we have a lot of current information and new information and updated information going on. And of course, I'm looking at Miss Anderson Allison as the lead to work on that with the committee. I'm tasking her. Things on the digital assistant, as I look at Miss Williams Hall, getting updates probably at least quarterly for now, about that. And the same thing about things in the call center for Where's My Ride. I think I've gotten some of the basics down. But now I want to open the floor up to committee members of suggestions of items for the our work plan and at what frequency we should be hearing about this during the course of the year. Don't all be shy. This is our working plan and document in progress. Oh, okay. And the 703 numbers, this is a committee member.
Yes, Susan Baumeister.
Oh, okay, go ahead. All right, and then followed by Sarah.
Okay. Yes, I would like us to maybe get a quarterly report on the complaint process. I'd like us to be a little more familiar with if there are timelines for that process and how well it's working to make sure that customers, when they do have complaints, that they're addressed in a timely manner and we get an idea of how satisfied the customers are and how satisfied the WMATA staff is that the process is working properly.
Thank you for that contribution, Sarah.
Love that idea. So I'm Sarah Ride, a middle-aged white female wearing a blue t-shirt and sitting in my kitchen today. So a couple of thoughts. Big picture, I think it's great to have a brainstorming like this. On the other hand, I know for some people it takes longer to sort of think through things. And so maybe we can send out whatever we get from today and then circulate it a bit and give people a little more time to think it through and get back before we kind of make any big final decisions.
Oh, this is a fluid process. I mean, things change throughout the year, and of course, you submit things to the chair or to one of the vice chair, and we prioritize things. So this is not the be all end all. We definitely want the team effort. This is just to start the juices going before we hit the ground running in the fall with topics and the GM is coming in and saying, hey, these are the things that we are working on and doing.
Okay. I've got a couple of sort of, these are probably more one-off things than they are regular things, but just
Okay.
as I was listening to you talk, I was thinking about sort of a site visit or something, maybe not even a site visit, but about training, like how Metro Access drivers are trained. One of my acquaintances actually had a great experience working with a former Metro Access driver who is now in a different job, but used his training to, help with access services someplace else. And I just think it'd be really cool to know how people get trained, like, well, what exactly they're told to do and how and that sort of thing.
And
Also,
we've had site visits, so we can make a note of having at least a year's site visits. And to your point about your specific point about drivers, we can definitely incorporate that in as part of the work plan.
I would like sometime in the next couple of months, and this may be already included in what you're talking about, like, but some updates on the big contracts that Mr. Blake has been talking about for, like, the big picture system updates, that sort of thing.
Hello.
And then the last thing on my list was talking about communications. This has come up a bunch about how do we get the information out to our audience, because certainly the disabled community is a little bit different than the average person out there. I think we get information in different ways, or we may need it pushed to us more than pulled. But I know that WMATA has a fabulous communications team, and I was wondering if maybe we can pull them in and do some brainstorming about how we get out, like, regular communications to people. What are the best ways to do it? There's a lot of changes going on, and, not everybody's going to show up to an AAC meeting. So, do we use text? Do we use emails? Do we use phone calls? Do we do on the website? How do we get people to push them to the website to look for the updates? All that sort of stuff. I think it would be a good conversation at some point.
All
That's
right.
it.
All right. Dr. Butler, any other committee members?
No other hands. We just have Sarah and Susan's hands. Or I don't know if Susan had another question or
No, I
recommendation.
forgot to lower my hand. I'm sorry.
No
Okay.
problem.
If not, like Sarah has said, we're going to circulate these ideas, and we definitely are open to your feedback in writing by email as you are going, kind of if something else comes in mind during, obviously we're not meeting in August, and you want to contribute, this can add as part of the record as they begin to generate. We work with a system-wide accessibility in terms of and Metro Access staff with our work plan and agendas from month to month and throughout the year. Thank you for that. Next, we are going to get to our next topic about the eligibility office and hear from our wonderful esteemed director and Mr. Blake as myself have some questions after some interactions, and definitely Sarah Rod has some questions about some of the eligibility office processes.
Okay, so I would probably start with your questions. That might be an easier conversation than us just repeating what we've said before. So why don't we
Okay.
start with your questions?
So I guess my first question, and let me say the staff has been, for the most part, always outstanding and responding, but I had an interaction a few weeks ago about, I'm a person that sends things by email because I want to, use the most, and they've been very efficient, the office staff about responding to the eligibility or some of the managers. I sent in a request for you being, visitor status, and from my understanding, doing it as far advanced as possible. So I did about 6 weeks beforehand, knowing the dates for to providers. And I sent that email, and I didn't hear a response. And I sent a response back at it's 3 weeks, and I haven't heard anything, and that's kind of surprising to me. And so on that date in June, when I did try to call, I was on hold for a good almost hour and a half, still couldn't get through to the eligibility office. And then eligibility staff did respond back to me in email and did do the request that same day because I got calls back from both entities. So that was resolved. My questions come as th this has happened. if this happened to me, what processes we have in place where emails are or expectations that how often are the emails monitored, responded to? There could be a missed opportunity where we have not responded to other customers if it might be taking this long, because obviously that's another method of reaching the office. And then my other question comes is, I know the office does a lot of forward phone call facing response to a lot of responsibilities that they do have to talk to people over the phone in terms of the eligibility processes and handling people in person. What are possible tasks, since they have a lot of tasks that they are tasked to do, from password resets to other things, can be done? Preferably, if and I'm not saying a digital assistant or anything like that, because I know how customers feel, but other processes like maybe going through a third-party provider to reset their password in a secure way for those who might be tech savvy, other avenues where other options that can be done to get some of the inquiries answered in a reasonable time frame. And then I'm going to lead with Sarah with her questions. That's with mine.
Well, I would say, and I'm familiar with the situation you're referring to. I would say there are multiple means of communication, and obviously, in your case, you emailed us, you didn't hear a response back, so then you called in, and the situation got resolved. We get lots of emails, I know, through that office. Most of them are related to certification and recertification applications. There are times I would probably say there's an opportunity that there's a case where an email could be missed. When I send an email to someone, if I don't get a response, in a reasonable time to my email, I generally resend a reminder. I don't know if you did that in this case. The reminder may have worked. You decide to be more proactive and make a phone call. But I would say, there's always opportunities to automate certain things, but when you're talking about automating people's information that could be related to medical and other very sensitive information, we're extremely careful in the automation of those type of processes.
And I understand that for that particular office that you need to speak to someone about eligibility. So not that piece of information, because I know they do things in terms of reduced fare and blah blah blah. Is there other possible avenues to explore to begin those processes versus being on the phone? If for someone that's tech savvy like me, like I know for like reduced fare, I've learned with possibly one entity, it's like, oh, okay, here's a form, fill out your information, send this and a photo if you require it, a digital photo, blah, blah, blah. And they acknowledge it by email they started, or do we have to come in person, for that? 'Cause I know they handle a lot of different tasks. Just thinking about possible different tools for those who might be opting to do that, but leaving the phone obviously as a mainstay, people have to be able to speak to somebody to get these processes done, if that makes sense.
No, I got you. And what I was about to finish off by saying is that while we're very sensitive and careful, we are looking at ways that there can be more automation, not to avoid a missed email. That's not really what's pushing it. It is about the employees, the human agents, just like we're doing on the Metro Access side, to be more available and more free to assist customers who call in or even write in and really need additional support than a digital assistant can offer. So we started with the Metro Access side, but we're definitely looking at things on the eligibility side that will relieve those human agents from certain tasks and thereby free them up for more one-on-one interaction with other customers. Again, in the case in your situation, email. I mean, again, I was following the conversation after you called in, and I saw that it was being handled, so I didn't feel I needed to intervene. But yes, the email address, the one thing maybe we could do is separate emails, but then that creates additional confusion because in your case, you were writing about a visitor's pass, as you mentioned. Well, we get very few of those. Could that be in a whole separate email? Sure, it could. But then that creates another email our customers then have to try to remember. And so it's a balance. Your email shouldn't have been, missed on that. But again, with multiple means of communication, one didn't get a response. I would invite you to send a, just reply all and we'll get it again. Or as you did call in and the matter was resolved, and I
Well,
would.
it wasn't resolved call, and that's a separate issue where I was still sitting there for an hour and a half. It did get responded back
Well,
verbally
now you
in
mentioned that,
email.
yes.
Yeah,
Of
it's
course,
just
that's
that.
the
And
customer.
they were very honest about, this might be an extended call, but I was like, I'm sitting here an hour and a half and I still can't reach anybody.
Right. Okay. So, one thing I've always said to customers, I've heard that before. There is absolutely no reason to be on hold more than 10 minutes. I mean, I can't speak for other aspects of life.
Yeah.
You call back
I
later.
said, is this the norm for this office? I was like,
Well,
woo-wee.
we have a method of looking at it, but again, any person, again, it's just advice in life for me.
Yeah.
There's no reason to ever stay on hold for an hour on anything, unless you're probably talking to the White House and you got an invitation and you got to stay online in order to get through security. You just simply call back, because if you're on hold for an hour, that call could be in a queue that something's going wrong, something there is no, because there is no time that is so busy that there are not enough agents to answer a call that they would see on the board for an hour. So if they're not seeing it, that's probably why it's not being answered. So I would always advise, if you're on hold for more than 10 minutes, the best thing to do is hang up and call back.
Okay, because
That's just
I
a
was just
practice I
like
do in
I
life
was very
in many
surprised. I was like,
places.
"Ooh."
Yeah. We could have another discussion, and I could give you a more detailed point by point about it in terms of where that call went and how did, out of 12 agents, no one could see that on the board. Something probably wasn't right there. So I would never stay on the hold that long. There's no reason to do so.
I mean, the only thing I will say is that it did say in the outgoing message that there could be an extensive wait and hold in some kind of language. It was said that. So it did forewarn the customers that there might be a wait. So you may want to look at that too. I mean, they were
And
being honest about it, but I said, is it going to be
was
like
the human
that?
agents, or was that the phone messaging?
That was part of the listen to the Elizabeth phone message. It does state that there can be an extended wait. It
Yeah.
was the way it was said. So
I can assure you, and maybe that says that, and I won't take that off because that's just, I can assure you, we're watching the whole time. Every day I get a report, and I haven't seen one certainly about an hour long hold. And so again, the folks in there know what I expect of them. There is no way out of all those agents that any call should take that long. So again, that's probably a technical issue. If you're ever on hold longer than 10 minutes, the best advice is hang up and call back.
All right. Sarah, you're going to go ahead next with your questions.
Yeah, so you've already touched on, I think, sort of the bottom line of some of these. I was involved with three different requests to the eligibility office in the last couple of months, one for myself and two helping other people. And two were cases for new applicants. One was a request for a replacement ID card. And I took out of it a pattern, and that is there is no pattern. It seemed to be very inconsistent whether I got, or the people who were asking got email responses acknowledging their emails, how long it took. In some cases, they did and they were timely, and in some cases, they kind of never did. In many cases, attachments seemed to have gotten lost or detached. But then when people got it, They weren't told that there was a lost attachment, either at all or until much later, and it very much delayed the processing times. And what I took away from the whole thing, as you just said, is not that there's a pro I think that there's a problem with the system as a whole. Like, we're working on a very old manual system with people who are really trying hard but are overworked. And there's got to be ways to automate this to make it easier, have a portal to upload things so that people can tell whether their documents have been received or not, to make things simpler for the people that are trying to do the processing so they aren't tracking down a million emails. I mean, if there's only one email address for all the different kinds of requests, like, how does anybody even sort through it to figure out, oh, this one is attached to this and this one is attached to that? There was no tracking number that was given. There's no way to find the original person that you're supposed to be talking to who's processing these things. It just seems like we're trying to do a lot with an old system and we're making a lot of really nice people on the other end work really hard and things have fallen through the cracks. And I could give you the details. I think I sent some of them to Paul. I can give you all the dates and the times and all that sort of stuff. And I don't want to blame people. I'm saying I think this process needs some modernization and that would take a big load off of everybody. And we would get more consistency and get more quickly or timely turnaround and things like that. The second issue that I had, which I have raised before, I believe Mr. Colbert was aware of this from before. I noticed an issue with the what I think the WMATA policy, as stated on the website, is for people who are looking for temporary reciprocal eligibility from some other place in the United States. There is federal guidelines on what that should look like, and what WMATA currently has on the website doesn't match the federal guidelines. So I think it's just a matter of some editing getting done, but it should be that any person who is a paratransit user anywhere in the country should be able to get reciprocal access to Metro Access within a day or two, and they should be able to present their identification or proof of disability eligibility for paratransit themselves. We do not need to go through the home transit agency, and it shouldn't take 3 weeks to do it. So that's just a fix that needs to be made to the system. And I think you guys already have a write-up on that, so I won't bore everybody with it.
Yeah. I'll look at that. I mean, our system has been tried and proven. I'll see what's on the website. I've never had a complaint that someone could not get eligibility, temporary eligibility here or elsewhere. So I will see what is written that is creating a problem. I will see if there, what the problem is. But I know we certainly. Before my time here, and even during the time here, I have not heard that as an issue prior. But we'll definitely see what's written. We'll take your points. But in terms of the customers in particular, I would like to hear or at least get the information myself, because again, as I've always said, under my way of management, and I've done this successfully in two different places, paratransit is much different than fixed route, so everybody is not treated the same and equally in terms of just one big broad picture, and we change a system because of a couple of matters. I really like to see the individual cases and assess what actually did take place. And we definitely believe in modernization. That's how we were able to get abilities right in so many different companies without any commercialized software, because we have the skill set to create our own software and tools, which we did. And we want, and believe me, we want to do that with eligibility, but again, very careful. The team does work hard, but I think one of the challenges is before we do wholesale changes, I would rather the team, and I've been working with the team to work smarter, not harder. I'm a smart worker, I'm not necessarily a hard worker. And so I utilize tools that are within the protection of information to make my life a lot easier than it otherwise would be. And so we're trying to do the same thing. But again, most of that effort has been on the Metro Access side. We're looking for different ways with the eligibility side. But before wholesale changes take place, I'm working on the the approach to work in general, because no matter how good a tool we use, it's how people utilize those tools and how they process their daily work that really makes them better, or I hate to use the word worse, but better or less than better on a day-to-day basis. So I certainly want to
Absolutely.
hear the experiences of the individual constituents you've been helping that had some challenges, so we can track those situations down individually and then build up from what we learned from that to a larger fix that may have applicability across the whole network.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyone else?
Chair, you have Rico Dancy.
Oh yeah, Rico, you can go ahead with your question
And
that you had from before.
my question is, when people who is certified, recertified, and you call eligibility, and they've been approved since July 8th, they will tell them they don't know when or they're going to mail them out the ID cards. So my question is, if a person been approved and they had the ID they have now is expired, but they waiting for their new one, why do they have to wait so long to get the new card? They don't know when they're going to get it. The man said, I don't know when it's going to get it. It had not been put in the mail. That's what he said. And I'm just curious about that.
So, Mr. Blake, I have a follow-up question to Rico's. In addition, because it's my knowledge, at least from my experience in the past, that the eligibility office does on-site have the ability to, once approved, the application and review within the 21 days to make the ID card and send it out from there instead of going through like a third-party vendor like some places do, which would take longer.
That is
So, I'm very curious about that.
yeah. So let's be for the let's add some context for the listening audience. And this is going back to Sarah's point. One of the things now I'm looking at trying to see what can be done. And this wasn't a, and I'm not saying with Rico, don't get me wrong. I'm just using this as an example. This wasn't a problem a few years ago. But it can be one now. So let's give the audience some context. Rico is referring to a customer who is conditionally eligible, meaning they are using they if at their desire, they can use the bus and rail service. So they have the Smart Trip card. Now, oops, did I lose anybody?
We can hear you. We can
We
hear
can
you.
hear you.
Oh, okay. I've lost my screen here. Can y'all see me?
Yeah, I can see you
Oh, well, okay. I
with
lost
the universe in the background.
Okay. Let me keep that. Why did I say a bad word? Oh, Jesus, when there's a problem. Okay, so what happened in the past, if you all recall, when you were a conditional eligible customer, you received a card and you went to the station. And this, and either you on the bus, it's just a flash. And at the station manager would open the gate. But that created a problem of its own for many years, and we resolved that problem because that meant you didn't have independent access to the station. So if the station manager was off somewhere or helping another customer, you had to wait for that station manager to open the emergency gate for you in order for you to access the station. So lo and behold, we create a solution that really plays upon your independence and your privacy. You get a Smart Trip card and you can enter and exit the Metro Rail stations independently without the need for assistance from a station manager. Great. We all celebrated that in this committee and at the time. However, what it does create, it's a real Smart Trip card, as we've discussed on here. And that Smart Trip card does come with a real expiration date. So now what happens is You can apply for recertification depending on how close you apply to the end of your recertification. And as Rico pointed out, the 21, oh no, I think Paul, you pointed out, sir, one of you said it, but the 21 days, if your eligibility expires along with that Smart Trip card while your recertification is taking place, now all of a sudden you don't have access to the nation's most accessible fixed route bus and rail service. And I think that is a problem. Now, one solution to that is you have, we allow people to recertify, I believe, 60 days in advance of their expiration. So the first solution, reapply as early as possible. That way, while your recertification application is being processed, it's not impacting your existing Smart Trip card. That's one thing. That's one solution. When this particular case, the gentleman said to Mr. Dancy or to the customer something to the effect, using, quoting him, "We don't know when it will arrive," because under my what I was told, because I looked into this to figure out what is going on here, how does that happen? The card actually was put in the mail and it was in the hands of the post office. And the gentleman was basically saying, "I don't know when the post office is going to deliver." So to resolve the issue, going back to your point, Mr. Semaphore, yes, we produce the cards ourselves on premise once the eligibility is confirmed or recertified. So that does eliminate the middle person, if you will, other than mailing. And when mailing becomes a problem, if someone has said they didn't get the card in the mail, we have one. I'll just use an example. Uber doesn't just transport people, as you know, transport foods, but it could also transport a Metro Access eligibility card in a very urgent situation. And we've done that in cases in which customers, primarily speaking, are the conditional eligible customers who are using fixed route services. So one solution again is, if you're conditionally eligible and most of your trips are on fixed route, you really rely on the fixed route, you utilize the fixed route and your independence to do so, apply as early as possible so that your current card is not impacted and your ability to use the service for free is not impacted while the certification 21-day process is taking place. The next solution is, kind of back to Sarah's point, let's see the process that may have created this particular situation. If it's our fault, we do have a backup plan, which is in terms of getting the card quickly to a customer on the day of, sort of like Amazon, but again, through Uber or other uses. And then finally, long term, we're looking at, and it goes to another issue that we brought up that came up in one of the during the Prince George's County NFB. That was a situation about utilizing the card through the phone. But we're also speaking now with our colleagues in that whole discussion. What freedom, flexibility do we have in terms of extending the life of an existing Smart Trip card? We're just getting started with the conversation, I'll put it that way. Getting Metro Access, just like I'm perhaps, and I'm not siloed when managing Metro Access, but how I'm kind of reluctant to just have a lot of different hands trying to manage Metro Access. You can imagine my colleagues. Here's a guy in Metro Access, now wants to start playing credit card manager. So there's a lot of little pieces to this. I'm glad Mr. Dancy brought it to our attention in a way that got to my attention. It opened up a lot of things for me to think about and look at. But I also just want to reiterate, we have systems in place, customer directed systems in place, and you get your first reminder call. Let me remind you also, you get your first reminder call of your eligibility expiring 60 days in advance of the eligibility expiring. So the first time you get that eligibility call, if you're using fixed route service with a Smart Trip card, my advice is to apply as soon as possible. And now that you don't need a doctor's signature, it should be very easy for everyone to hopefully avoid this situation on the customer side while we on our side do some more modifications to the process.
Because, well, I will say in past reiterations, for myself, for instance, getting the ID card usually, once everything is processed, it only takes less than a week to get it, depending on the postal service. So it's
Gotcha.
been, typically not an issue since they produce the ID cards on site. That's why I
Right.
asked that follow-up question.
But yes, we do produce them. You're right about that. And if there would have been any other, because there's been again some situations. I don't debate with the customers or lecture them. There's an issue. Didn't get the card. I can't get on fixed route. We produce the card. We send it out. Call Uber. Say, Uber, take this to this customer's location, and we're moving forward.
All right. Any other committee members on this
Thank
topic?
you. Thank you. I have one more question. So the application, if a person for the last couple of years been a, why do we have to renew every 2 years?
Oh.
If they already been approved of their disability, why they cannot make it every 4 years? Or
Sure.
why do we got to do every 2 years? I'm curious about that also.
Oh, so Rico, if you've been following our wonderful meetings, we now have a it went from 3 and 5 year stints to now standardized 5 years as of July 1st of this year. So now it's at a 5 year mark for anyone applying new or renewing for Metro Access for unconditional eligibility and conditional eligibility. It's a standard 5 years across the board.
Thank you so much, Chairman.
Not a problem. So next, let us move on. Unless there's anyone else, we do need to move on with our agenda with two more big topics. The administrator fee, Mr. Blake. So I brought up this concern, and maybe I'll start with the questions is, now that we start this with as of July 1st, if someone wins through the lottery and abilities ride trip and already has money in their Easy Pay account. So here's my curious question. So just to be clear for the record, let's say, okay, I already went through the reservations process and did a round trip. And they're deducting 450 each. And it does get selected, by the gods, the lottery, as an abilities ride trip for that next day. So walk us through how, the scenarios of I decide to take the trip, I already paid 450 and, deducted at the time of reservation out of my account. So does once the trip is completed, first scenario, that round trip, does the balance get credit back so it reflects the discount? So, I get $1.50 credit back for those two trips taken for each. And what happens in the scenario if those trips are proof of abilities, right? And I don't cancel those trips and, they're not taken. Do I get that 450 back? So kind of walk us through those scenarios. What would be happening on our Easy Pay account and approximately when, especially if I am, so instance, selected for two trips on a given day, and those trips are never used and I didn't cancel them. At what point would I get back the 450 from the original reservation?
Right. It's a great question, and it's come up, and so I've been responding primarily in text message because I've encouraged a lot of customers to text their questions. But this has been one. So let's pretend we're still, the abilities ride is still free. We can pretend. We got imagination.
Okay.
So abilities ride from I want to say September. Well, we don't need to go all the way back through history, but today you book your trip on abilities. Excuse me. You book your trip on Metro Access. We reduce that. You book a round trip. We reduce your account by $9.50.
$9.
Excuse me, $9. You're right. Getting the money anymore. Don't, now, see, and it was interesting because I always tease her about going to Carnegie Mellon versus she went to Indiana. Now she's going to tease me, so you can't even add no more. So we get $9. All right. Under the old way, when your trip was moved to Uber, you use both trips, you receive that $9 back into your account. You use one or none of the trips, you receive that $9 back in your account. Today, now that we have a $3 fee, you're going to book those same two trips. That trip is going to be $9. Those trips will have $9 removed from your account. You're going to either take both trips or take neither trip. Either way, that $9 is going back to your account. No change. What has changed is that maybe the next day, but more likely up to 6 or 7 days later, although the Lyft folks, I'll tell you on the Lyft, I haven't gotten to you all yet because I'm really trying to work on this process, listening to the committee about more frequent collection as opposed to monthly. So I've been doing them now on a weekly basis as we create an automated tool that's going to do most of this work for us. But what happens is, and eventually it may be the next day for at least some of the providers, that $9 is going to go back to your account whether you take the trips or not because they've been moved to Abilities Ride. But at some point between the time you take one of those trips, if you just take one or if you take both of them, between the time you take that trip in a couple of days, your account will be deducted by $3 times the number of trips you take. So if you took one of the trips, your easy pay is going to be deducted by $3. If you took both of the trips, your easy pay is going to be deducted by $6. So, kind of to answer your question, these are not combined transactions. It's not a 150 transaction. It's a full refund of your Metro Access because you didn't take a Metro Access trip, and it's a full deduction per trip of $3 for each Abilities Ride trip you take.
All right, so to be clean, because this is on the notes, this is why this will be in detail in the minutes, because obviously customers going to be asking. So what we're hearing right now, to be clear, is that there will be first, if obviously you booked it for a round trip for $9, and if it gets selected in the lottery, there will be a deduction at s couple days, some point during that week, of the $9 back to your account. And if you take those trips, well, you get the refund of $9. Then, if you say take both of those trips, then eventually there'll be a deduction of six. If you,
Correct.
yes, okay, got it.
That's correct. So they're two separate transactions, unrelated to each other.
So we know what to expect in our. When we someone like me looks at my EZK account and see all these. Back, additions and deductions.
Correct. You should theoretically, well, it depends on how much is in your account and at the time of booking, so it won't be that clean. But theoretically, in a very clean account with a lot of resources, which isn't everybody, so we're not trying to make this be for everybody. But generally speaking, you should see deductions of 450, refunds of 450, and deductions of $3. Those
Got it.
really should be the majority of your transactions. But again, if your account has a little less money, or if that Metro Access trip fare is based on a a trip that's less than 450, i.e., based on one of the locally operated transit services fares, then your numbers may not be that clean throughout your transaction history.
Like those who are in Prince George's County is based on the bus, which is supposedly free.
Exactly. So, being zero, I'm just trying to think. I don't know. I know the bus is free now. Montgomery County is free. What about the local services in Virginia? Are any of them charging a fare that's less than 225?
Alexandria is free. Dash.
Alexandria is free as well. Okay. So then so your account should be, well, not everybody, but for those in those particular areas, they should be zero in $3 instead of 450 in $3. So I
Okay,
guess in
good.
DC, if you're a DC resident, and being picked up in Washington, DC, a lot of your transactions, if you're moved to Abilities Ride, would be the minus 450 plus 450, then eventually a minus $3.
And I saw Patrick Sheehan's hands up with a question. Go ahead, Patrick.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Pat Sheehan, senior male with polo shirt and dark sweats on. So you're looking at, I thought you'd be looking at four transactions, but you're actually looking at four, the way it reads, I get deducted 450 for one trip. If it's a round trip, I get deducted another 450, which is two trips, two transactions. It doesn't say anything, of course, about the ability, the fee on the, for abilities, right? If I get the lottery, that's three transactions. So how many approximately? I know it was 1.6 million abilities ride trips last year.
That's
That
correct.
seems like that's a lot of transactions going on throughout the year. This is automated. And what happens when people's accounts get screwed up? I mean, do you have more people? What are the resources behind implementing this fee?
Well, the resources is our team, and yes, we're putting in place an automation and process, and we're double checking it, and we're looking at to make sure that it doesn't make certain errors that a human, heavily human involved process might make. So, yes, it's basically three transactions per trip.
Or trip. Right.
Two
So with 36,000 eligible people on paratransit, that
of
would
them.
give you approximately 108,000 transactions a month.
Oh, well, it's actually more than that because it's 100 and about 50,000 abilities ride trips a month.
150 abilities ride trips a month.
Yes.
100 and how many?
Around the 150 mark. Around 130, 140, 150.
150 times,
Three.
okay, times three. That's a lot of
Yes.
transactions, particularly
A
if
lot of
people have
transactions.
problems with their accounts.
And what we're trying to help them with is what we walked through with Paul did. For many years, we had two transactions per abilities ride trip. Now we have a third one that also involves an actual deduction for the cost of the trip. But we always had two transactions per trip.
Right.
Anyone who's been on Abilities Ride or been on Metro Access, had an Easy Pay account and had money on that account, their ledger is quite busy over the last many years because there's been a lot of 450 deductions and 450 refunds
Refunds, right, exactly.
all of those 3 million
Okay.
trips.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that the large number is what really I understand the process. I was just concerned about the large number of transactions. And for those folks that are really watching their accounts, and I've had a couple of calls from people that are, they are concerned that they're going to run out of money. My response back to them would be put more money in your account and you'll see it even out. But that's perhaps not the smartest thing for me to say.
Well, but be honest with you,
And that's
Sarah.
an individual decision, of course. I mean,
Absolutely.
with me, I'm looking at my easy pay account as a hawk. That's why I said I want it to be explained so people understand the nuance for this for the records and how, this is going to be cleanly done
Because and also I would just
with
add,
transparency.
putting an accountant's hat on, although Ms. Anderson is the accountant here. But if we wanted to reduce the transactions, what that would mean is we would then have to combine the efforts, the refund, the initial deduction, the refund, and the abilities ride fee. The problem with that, if we did it that way, is now you don't have a clear trace back for any particular trip. Because now instead of looking for $3, I'm looking at 150, and I don't know where that
Right,
$3 came from.
yeah, and that's exactly what was mentioned to me, which is interesting that you bring that up also. So you're thinking that the larger amount of transactions in the long run will be easier to trace back, particularly if a person is in that transaction list is paying the administrative fee. Yeah, I got you.
Absolutely. And I
Yeah.
had a customer the other day. They text me and they were quite adamant. But because of doing it in this kind of methodology, I not only was able to show them the booking ID specifically related to the transaction fee deduction of $3, but even gave them further details in terms of the pickup, the drop off, the date, the time, and it was positive. I didn't get a thank you, but the quietness was the result of
Yeah,
it.
of course. And like I said, I can attest for someone who's techie like me. I'm looking at my Easy Pay account. I'm looking at Metro Access booking with the booking ID. I can match it because I can keep up with it. I just want to, make sure that we always, as you always, and Miss Anderson's been very clear about transparency of this whole process.
Yes.
Yes,
It's
I
not being
enjoyed when
true.
it was free, sir. It was
Thank
simpler
you.
as far as transactions were concerned. But I understand. It's good that you've seen that, 150 coming through, because I got a couple of questions on that too. So
Yes.
glad you addressed it.
And since I
Okay.
want to keep my job, I won't have a comment on the free versus.
What's that, sir?
But no.
So, any questions from anyone else about the
Initially,
administrative fee?
and we're glad that it did, but charging a fee in a lot of ways now, not only, I mean, there's an actual rationale behind it, and I can't dispute that. But it also demonstrates that this is beyond a little niche toy that WMATA
Right.
created. This is really a mature approach to fulfilling the civil rights of people with disabilities who choose to utilize other options. And now, unlike in the past, where some have replicated what we did here, this really can grow because not everybody, and certainly not every agency, is going to offer public transportation free of charge on a global scale and be able to do so in a feasible manner. So the growth and the maturity of the program, a fee was a necessity, but that's certainly not the primary
Right.
reason it was implemented.
Yep. I understand, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other person with a question as it relates on the committee from the AAC of Metro Act Subcommittee about this topic before we move on to the digital assistant, Ms. Williams Hall, before we get to public comments?
There are no other hands at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. So, next, Ms. Williams Hall. Updates about digital assistant before we go out on.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Terrian Williams Hall, and I serve as director for Metro Access. I am a middle-aged African American woman with long hair and glasses. With that, let's get started. So, we continue to work and collaborate closely with our AI partner to identify and implement enhancements across the services that we provide. And these right now include the reservations and Where's My Ride digital voice assistant, a Where's My Ride chatbot that is agent-facing. And we just recently deployed the reservations chatbot to the first class of reservations agents to use it. The benefit of the reservations chatbot is it avoids 3 to 4 additional days of training of our complicated scheduling and dispatch system, affectionately known as Trapeze. So we're excited about that. Some of the recent focus improvements that we've done focus on streamlining the trip booking process. It improves our address and trip detail presentations. We've standardized scripts, messaging, and format. So you'll hear, if you come across those two calls with the agents that are using the chatbot, you will hear a little bit of a difference in the way that they're presenting the information. We're enhancing customer communications and overall usability. Our goal is over time to have all new hires trained on the chatbot and then only keep the older or the more tenured agents with Trapeze in the event that they run into a problem that the chatbot cannot solve, that call can be handled by the more tenured agents. Now, we believe that this is going to increase our agent efficiency, improve the messaging with customers, the experience will be a lot more consistent. We think it's going to enhance the customer's experience, and it really does simplify interactions for the agents. So we've also just recently changed the voice of our IVR. So if you call in today, you hear a lot more natural sounding, energetic voice than what was there before. So we're hoping that that also invites more users to participate. Thank you. I will take any questions.
Oh, so we've gone away from the nasal voice messaging. I hate to say it, but it just had like a nasal thing. So I'm really curious to hear it now.
Tarian, can you do me one thing before we go on and take any questions? And I know you're ready to take some questions. To the point earlier, we don't have to give out everything because can't give out everything at the moment.
Right.
Do you want to share? I forgot who brought it. I think Sarah, I believe Ms. Rat brought it up. You want to give any update on where we are with the solicitation that we anticipate being a highly competitive, a lot of interest is already brewing in it. Nothing against our current provider. They very well could win again. That's the thing I always love to say about all of these. Fair, open competition. But there's a lot of interest from many companies who are now hearing the buzz that we're going to the market on this. Do you want to share with the committee and the public some details about the future of our AI approach to the call center?
Absolutely. So we have just recently submitted our statement of work and request for proposal documentation to procurement. That has triggered the procurement process. Right now, we are hoping to have an award issued by the end of this year and implementation no later than next March. So all of the features that we currently do not have at our disposal, we are looking to get some of those additions. And many of them you guys have already mentioned in earlier meetings. We've included those things in our solicitation. Unfortunately, I don't have the list in front of me to enumerate what those things were, but we heard you, and wherever possible, they were included in that solicitation. So we hope to have an award by the end of the year and full implementation by next March.
Okay, I'll open the floor up to anyone, to Ms. Williams Hall, about the digital assistant. I know there's going to be hands.
Sarah Rod was first, and then Susan Bowmaster.
All right, go ahead, Sarah first, and then Susan Bowmaster next.
Oh, thank you for the update. I'm glad that the contract process is moving forward. I guess thank you for including our request. It'd be kind of nice to know what things were actually included or to have had a little more opportunity to give feedback on that. But I guess we'll trust that you represented some of the things that we discussed. But my original question, can you explain a bit more about this chatbot thing and how it's working? And I'm not sure I quite grasped how it is helpful, like how it's being used, what it does, that sort of thing.
Okay. So the customer doesn't interact with the chatbot. It is agent-facing. That's the first thing I want to share. And what it does is it simplifies and streamlines some of our processes. The most popular, the one you'll likely relate to most, has to do with Uber. So in the past, when we first rolled out the Uber Central support, that was a dedicated group of agents, about 9 or 10 people across a 24/7 hour cover period that had to take all Uber requests. So no matter how many calls came in, those people had to wait and or be transferred over to the Uber team to get their Uber requests fulfilled. Well, today you can call in and speak to any agent. And if your trip is late or projected late, they can now through the chatbot, just chat with the chatbot and tell it, here's the customer's trip. The chatbot now runs that to Trapeze, gathers all the trip information. Then it takes it out to, once confirmed that the customer is eligible, it takes it to Uber Central and books the trip and sends the link to the customer. So now something that could have taken 15, 20 minutes in the past is now available to our customers instantaneously through our Where's My Ride agents. And all agents are trained and are expected to use that. It also does, well, our primary reason for bringing it on before we discovered all of these other features was so that we could give real-time traffic information to our customers. Today, if you call in and you get an agent, let me rephrase that. So a year ago, if you called in and you got an agent and you said, you know, where's my vehicle? They would go into the system. They could find the exact location of the vehicle, but then they would give you an estimated time of arrival that's based on historical traffic patterns. And if you guys can recall, our traffic, the history goes back up to 5 years. So that includes the traffic conditions at the tail end of the COVID period. So it might tell you one thing when in fact, without any reference to what's going on real time in the environment, it did not include those things. So the customers were getting frustrated, would call back 2 or 3 times just to find out when the vehicle was coming. And usually, almost always, the trip was ETA was incorrect. What the chatbot does, though, it takes the trip ID and the vehicle location information from Trapeze. It sends it to, I believe it's Bing Maps. Gets the accurate location, accurate real-time traffic conditions, and an accurate ETA that it shares back immediately with the agent within a matter of seconds, thereby allowing us to give more accurate real-time traffic conditions. I could go on, but I see that there are a lot of hands, so I think I'll stop there, if that's okay.
All right, so
very, very cool. Thank you.
Yes.
Susan is next, followed by Tawan.
Yeah, that was basically my question too. As a Metro Access customer, when I call in and finally do get to an agent, what difference would I find? And I guess you're saying only that I would get better, faster information.
Yes, and more accurate. Now, what we've done with the reservations agents, because I just told you guys about Where's My Ride, is now a reservations agent. You won't experience the differences as much as the agent does. So when an agent is onboarded, they actually go through about 2 weeks of training. We've cut that down significantly, down to almost 4 days of training. That agent can come in, get all the customer service training, learn everything about the system, learn about our QA standards and all of that, and then be taught on the chatbot. They never have to get the Trapeze software training, which is the most complicated part of the job, because now the chatbot does all of that for them. They have a natural interaction with the chatbot. The same information they're getting from the customer, they're telling the chatbot. Chatbot's giving them all the information and fully booking the trips for the customers.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Wow.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Farmer here, First Vice Chair. Question. So, I know that we have people on your team with disabilities. We'll maintain HIPAA security, and we'll just go with the question as a more generic question about persons with disabilities. So is it possible that since Trapeze, in fact, is one of the more challenging components, could this potentially be an opportunity that opens up, and this is not from our side of the coin, being the consumer, but from the agent side, create opportunity that maybe create better accessibility for persons with disabilities to expand their opportunities within the working side of the house, because you now improved accessibility since trapeze is no longer a variable. Not to say that the chatbot is going to be ideal, but it may be. Where do you all kind of stand on that?
I will share, Mr. Blick, if you want to join in and add anything, please, sir, feel free to do so. I believe that it absolutely simplifies the work. And so to that end, as much as it can broaden our horizons with regard to accessibility, I absolutely believe there are numerous opportunities there.
That's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah.
And I agree. If you look at the interface of, and I'll give some credit to the call center team, and both teams have actually done it, the prior contractor and this contractor. If anyone is familiar with the interface of Trapeze, it's interesting. I'll put it that way, because they could be competing too. So let me be careful how I say things. But a lot of companies have made overlays or interfaces that display the Trapeze data much easier, in a much easier fashion. So some of that is already taking place, but I totally agree with you. The fact that a chatbot, which many people, including, of course, many people with disabilities, are engaged with now today for a host of reasons, if that becomes the genesis, really the alpha and the omega of one's job on a day-to-day basis, it opens up a world of opportunities for many people to be employable, including additional folks with disabilities. So I'm totally with you that as we utilize these tools, unlike a mutual friend of Patrick and myself, AI doesn't necessarily replace jobs. It actually creates opportunities for new jobs and new opportunities if we embrace them. But we have to be careful. Don't just throw all your data to an AI agent and say it's right, because that's not always the case. So we're very careful in making sure that before we put customer-facing information out there, it's right and it's sound, and but the opportunities are just growing, absolutely. And can I don't see another hand. Can I add one last, and I got to be careful, and Terry, and I don't know if they know, I think I've said it plenty of times, that you're a lawyer, so as my lawyer, you keep me honest. I don't want to get into too many things, but there is one piece of this, and it's not perhaps not realistic at this moment. So that's why I'm going to share it, because we really want it in there. And I call it the Patrick Sheehan algorithm. Because we had that, if y'all remember a few months ago, Mr. Chairman Sheehan and I got into a lengthy discussion about the digital assistant. And I'm going to quote Mr. Sheehan. He said, it's failures. What I'm calling the Patrick Sheehan algorithm that I would love to see in there, if Patrick Sheehan, using him as the example, calls in and really genuinely, on a regular basis, attempts to allow the digital assistant to resolve his issues. And in some cases, it may not. Some cases will, but he doesn't come on as agent, but actually genuinely gives it a try. What I want this algorithm to be incorporated in, and again, we got to be careful. You know, I'm going to let the companies, I don't want to be too involved in this. But when Patrick Sheehan calls in and builds that history of being cooperative, when he really does need an agent, the algorithm is going to recognize that, the agent is going to recognize that, and perhaps allow that to get in a little quicker. But if Patrick is always just against it, you know, it's the little boy, the wolf. It's always a crisis. Well, the agent is going to learn that it's probably not always a crisis, and it's going to really engage in the interview process even longer than if you just go ahead and allow it to try to help you. So I don't know exactly how we're going to call it, other than we're trying to, you know, give the Patrick Sheehan idea in all this to whatever tool wins out, that it doesn't necessarily, as I said on another topic earlier, everything doesn't have to be one size fits all for every customer. I really treat every customer as an individual. And I really would love to create a tool, or we get a tool that can offer some personality, some individuality based on the customer's behavior and willingness to cooperate with our approach moving forward. So I would love to see that in there. I hope it works. And I'm hoping what it does is allow the system to work as we intended to, because we said it's not going away, but also allow the system to recognize that Patrick doesn't call a wolf every time. So if he's calling wolf this time, it's probably a wolf, and let's try to get him to an agent a little quicker.
Very good, sir. As long as we don't call it hell.
All right. I know right now we are at 5:37 and we have customer comment period. And Sarah, I see your hand. I really want to make sure we get the customers. If there are any, Dr. Butler, are there customers right now?
I do see Janice Samuel's hand up
Oh,
at this
okay.
time, and I
So
also see Roseanne Ashby.
what we'll do, Sarah, if you can hold your comment, we can put you in customer comment period for it after I get members of the public, because we do need to start that now. Dr. Butler, you want to give your spiel?
Sure. So we will now move to the public comment period. Each speaker will have 2 minutes. When you are recognized, please state your name and provide a brief visual description if this is your first time speaking today. If you would like to submit written comments, they may be sent to the Zoom chat and we will read those on your behalf. For those joining by phone, you may mute or unmute yourself by pressing star 6 and raise or lower your hand by pressing star 9. For those joining by computer, please use the microphone icon to mute and unmute and the raise hand feature, which is located under the reactions menu.
And with that, our first person is going to be, I believe, Janice Sanders. Is
Janice,
that correct?
correct.
Thank you. As I ask my question, remember there's no such thing as a stupid question, please.
I always say that many a times as a teacher, Miss Samuel, to my students in Prince George's County Public Schools.
Wait, now you're making it a county thing.
Yeah.
With introduction of the chat bot, will that help Metro Access move toward being able to offer us the ability to have same day booking requests?
Well, actually, I mean, yeah, let me just be frank with you, Ms. Sang. You don't need to. Same day service is available like today. And sometimes if the OCC is ever a little backed up or short of staff, we offer same day bookings because we want to make sure no one is denied a trip because they couldn't get through the reservations the day before. So we absolutely could do same day right now with the given with the current technology. It's a matter of feasibility and us fulfilling our responsibilities to you and the customer base in terms of your civil rights. So when privileged with an opportunity, one focus could have been same day service, but at the time the focus became let's offer because another competing interest was the cost of Metro Access. At the time, I came in, it was $650 a trip. So that was also a competing interest in terms of what I heard from customers. So the most feasible way to address the bulk of customers became the abilities ride approach, which was more of a personalized, discounted service as opposed to same day. Same day is going to get here one way or another one day. But it takes it's just a matter of how do we make it a feasible option that we don't have to eventually cut back once we give it up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And our next customer, Dr. Butler, that's from the
Yes.
public.
Yes, Roseanne Ashby.
Thank
All
you. I am a white woman. I have blonde hair and a ponytail.
I have two quick comments. The first one, I book online most of the time because I find that more convenient and quicker. Well, and I, even though most of the time it works perfectly, I've had a few occasions recently where, despite getting a confirmation number, everything's confirmed, the night before my trip, I don't get a Metro Access call. And then when I call in, they tell me, oh, your trip was automatically canceled. And sometimes our system does that. And I wonder what's being done to resolve that problem because it leaves me scrambling to figure out how to get to my destination the next day. And the other comment I want to make is related to the fees that we talked about, and I understood perfectly the explanation that was given with the credits and the debits and all that. But why can't we develop a system whereby we're either debited $4.50 or we're debited $3, and this occur right like the day before or the day of the trip? It seems to me like we're making a very complex financial system where it would be so simple if it was either one debit or the other, depending on whether you had Metro Access or Abilities Ride. So, thank you.
Very fair
So,
question. Very fair.
oh, can I answer the first question for the booking online? And this happened to me on rare occasions, sort of that ghost booking where the trip doesn't partially go through. See, me as a sighted person, I can double check it on the app because my transit manager, it will the trip goes through properly. I can see that it's a trip for next day. And if I don't, then that's possibly one of the reasons to your first question. You don't see it. It's partially booked. It's kind of in there, but it didn't get canceled. Is that correct, Mr. Blake?
That is correct, but if Ms. Ashby is asking and specifically saying this has been a recent occurrence, there has been a technical issue with Trapeze that we are working on, Transdev, and Ms. Williams Hall and Ms. Anderson and team are working the three parties together. Metro Access, Transdev, and Trapeze are working on a particular issue related to this. One thing I always encourage customers, couple of things. Well, the main thing is, if you can, you use the app, and the call from Metro is good, but I would use the app to see if the trip is booked as the address and all that good information, and to see if it's still there. And if it's not, you can send a text message that night. Or you can, call in the morning and get it reinstated. So I highly encourage the use of the app, not just for tracking the trip on, at the time it's coming to get you, but just to see what are your trips on? Are they on Metro Access? Are they on Uber, et cetera? So I would use that. But yes, we're working on a technical issue as well. And if I could get to your financial question, very great question. The point is, though, that when when you use online booking or call in, whenever you book your trip, the time you're booking your trip, you're booking a Metro Access trip. Always. We have to remember the days when there was no Abilities Ride, there were no lifts and all this other kind of stuff. It was Metro Access. So when you book your trip, even if you are highly confident and highly, have a whole lot of reasons to believe it's going to be moved to Uber, there is no guarantee that it'll be moved to Uber or Lyft. So at the time of booking, we cannot s decide at that moment $4.50 or $3 because the decision hadn't been made yet. So the only thing we can take out is the $4.50 because the one thing you're absolutely guaranteed of is a trip on Metro Access. So until that trip is moved to Abilities Ride and until that trip is actually taken by the customer. Now, Mr. Sheehan pointed out, yeah, you're talking three transactions. It's a whole lot of transactions. Imagine if I took the $3 from you and you didn't take the trip on Uber. It just remained, you didn't need it again, or you just decided. And that happens a lot. Our cancellation rate across the system is like 15%, and that carries over to the Abilities Ride providers as well. So now I not only have to create an agent that can deduct money for completed trips, we have to go back and look at all the trips we sent and double check the ones that were not completed and then issue refunds. That would be a lot more complicated and even more transactions. So we don't take the money for abilities ride until the trip is confirmed, completed. And when you book your trip, you're booking a Metro Access trip, not necessarily an abilities ride trip.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Dr. Butler, is there any other members of the public before we go to AAC members?
There are no other hands raised at this time, Chair.
And the first person we have from the AAC that wants to make a public comment or a comment is, I believe, Sarah, right?
Correct.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, thank you. Actually, let me ask a follow-up question to what Roseanne just asked Mr. Blake. I think she had a very good point, and I realize how complicated this is, but why don't we just wait until after whichever ride is completed and then charge the $4.50 or $3 instead of charging up front and then waiting and then it may or may not happen and then refunding and that sort of thing? Wouldn't it make more sense to just wait till the end?
Well, great question. Here's the challenge with that. If we don't book, if we don't take your money at the time of booking, and it doesn't happen because everybody doesn't use an EasyPay account, we have to collect your money at the time you're getting on the vehicle. We collect the money at the door, which then slows the process. And as we've heard in this committee many times in the past, because we collect the money at the door. In some neighborhoods, and again, this is not me saying it, this is the testimony of some customers and even some former members of the AAC. I'm in a neighborhood, I do not want to pull my money out on the curb or even at my door. Why can't I wait to get on the vehicle? But then if they get on the vehicle, they don't pay, the driver can't leave. There's a whole lot of other issues there. So we believe that prepaying the trip for a Metro Access trip is the safest and most efficient means of fare collection that Metro Access has practiced for a number of years, which is why the money is collected upfront through the EasyPay account, so that it limits any sort of uncomfortable interactions, but also it limits the amount of cash interaction between drivers and customers.
Couple of further thoughts to that then. Could we install some sort of a fare collection thing on Metro Access vehicles so people are using their cards to pay at the time, like you would if you're boarding a regular bus or something?
Right. So the answer is, so let me answer two different ways. The first answer is, can you install a fare media on Metro Access vehicles? Absolutely. That's clear. You can do that. The question then becomes, the second question is, should we install fare media on Metro Access vehicles? Answer, generally speaking, especially if we're trying to reduce costs, reduce reasons for a vehicle to have to go out of service, reduce other issues, and because even if you have it on them, what if the account doesn't have enough money? You're still dealing with cash. It has been looked at before, long before I got in this role. Fare media on Metro Access is really not a way of moving the system towards a more feasible future. If we're going to have electronic media and we already have a version of electronic media, why create a second version? If you can put the money on the account, you might as well put the money on the account as opposed to putting the money on the account at the vehicle. It's just not a it, it just doesn't create the sustainability push that we really need in order to keep Metro Access moving forward in the way that we've been trying to do.
Well, I guess, but the question was more sort of, do we really need to collect it at the time you're booking, or could you wait until the day of the travel or something, which would then also you could know which one you might be charging by then or something. It's just that the whole charging, returning seems like a lot of extra
On the
tracking
surface,
going
it
on.
does, but again, if you think about the global credit card transaction banking environment, you would be, well, you probably already know, so you wouldn't be amazed. Some folks would be amazed at how many global transactions are taking place. On this one, I mean, I hate to use the word trust me or believe me. It is much, much simpler from a transaction standpoint, auditing standpoint, tracking standpoint, to allow the individual transactions to take place than to institute yet another layer of that. And then again, the machinery, maintenance, tracking, we would make the process extremely more complicated than necessary.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
There.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Butler. Is there anyone else?
Susan Bowmaster has a question.
Go ahead,
Yes, hi.
Susan.
I just wanted to say quickly about the Patrick Sheehan algorithm that there are two situations where you need to get an agent right away. One is where the window has closed, you don't know where your ride is, you need to connect with somebody who can help you. Second, you've been told the ride is outside, you go and look for it, it's not where it's supposed to be, you need to connect with someone immediately. So just sometimes wolf really does mean wolf, and thank you very much for giving some consideration to that, that sometimes the assistant just won't help us. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And that's and I heard loud and clear on that. I've heard from I'm hearing from you now, and I've heard from other customers. And again, it may be pie in the sky right now. We'll see. I'm sure Terrian is going to try to do her best to make sure that language is in there, crafted in the right way that doesn't create other problems in a procurement process. But I believe, if we're talking about going to the moon and Mars, we can't do this right here. So, I've heard you loud and clear. We've heard you loud and clear, and we're going to do our part to, again, stay with our goals in mission in terms of the use of the digital assistant, but not be so rigid that we're closed ears to the customer concerns and needs that we can't help the industry find other solutions if those solutions don't already exist.
Thank you. Anyone else, Dr. Butler, before I let you do your closing?
No other hands are raised, sir.
Go ahead and do your closing.
Okay. So thank you to all committee members, Metro staff, guests, interpreters, and members of the public for your participation this evening. If you have questions, comments, and concerns, please send those to Metro AAC Chair at WMATA.com or by phone at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
And with that, can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays, abstentions, and remember, we have no meetings. No meetings after this one in the month of August. We look forward to the AAC meeting in September, and information will come out via email from Dr. Butler. Thank you, everyone, for a wonderful year.
Great meeting and have a great summer. No August surprise.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Have a good evening.
Bye.